What is going on, beautiful people? Welcome in to 104.5 The Zone. Wave hi to the camera, just like Jonathan Schaefer of J. Martin Ramon just did, if you're hanging out with us on Zone TV. Got a lot of great stuff to get into. I went to Titans practice yesterday, got some stuff to report back on, because, of course, Julio Jones, as our buddy Ron Slay likes to say, was in the building.
Julio!
And frankly, better than that, he wasn't in the building. He was out on the practice field.
Things He's out the building.
Things you love to see. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved. 615-737-1045 is how you join the conversation. We welcome your participation. We will welcome Ian Harditz of Pro Football Focus. Listen, I have been I'm not an anti-Pro Football Focus person, okay? But there's a lot of it that there's a lot of stuff that's done for likes and retweets, which is basically my entire existence, so far be it for me to judge. But there are things about Pro Football Focus that I respect infinitely, and one of those things is Ian Harditz. He's one of the most numerically driven individuals in football analysis. He's going to join us for the first time on the show coming up next, so we'll get into Derrick Henry usage and how it projects through the season, cornerback and wide receiver matchups for the Titans and the Bills, because he writes a weekly column on the matter, and we'll get into that discussion with Ian coming up next. But in the meantime, we got to start with Julio, right? Just like AJ said. That's basically, it's like you almost hear it. I don't even know how to describe it. I hear AJ Brown's voice in my head subliminally every time I see him, which makes me laugh.
Julio!
It just kind of goes off. It's like, it's almost like a severe weather alert warning on your phone. That's the sound that I hear. That's what plays on my phone every time he's within 150 feet. And he was yesterday, the first time in 2 weeks since dealing with that hamstring injury. Had him sidelined for basically the second half against the Colts. He returns to the field today. I'm sure Mike Vrabel will be asked about that when he gets to the podium just around noon Central time. So for Julio, there's no guarantee that he plays on Monday night. And all we can look at is his day-by-day progression, and what we saw yesterday was pretty standard. Now, here's the thing about Julio, and specifically yesterday. Because it's a different week, normally you would get an injury report Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, play Sunday. This week, because they play Monday night, it'll be Thursday, Friday, Saturday injury report, so we don't know actually how much Julio Jones did yesterday outside of the 20 minutes of practice that's open to the media. All you get to see in that 20 minutes of practice is the guy stretching an individual drill. So basically just enough to get a little bit of a feeling of how they're moving early on, but not to necessarily understand how much they were able to do on that given day without the context of the injury report. So it's unclear how much he was able to do. And again, I'm sure Vrabel will be asked about that, and Mike will not be terribly willing to answer the question, or will at least talk around the question, because of course, it's a player who's coming off an injury. But this has the ability to significantly impact the game. This has been kind of the frustration with Julio, right? Because we talked about on, I believe it was Monday, Peter King's Football Morning in America column, where he's kind of documenting, yeah, the number of teams that were in the money for Julio when he was available as a trade acquisition. I believe he brought up Baltimore, New England, and I think there was a third team in there, or rather a fourth team, including the Titans, but I do not recall off the top of my head. Regardless, what Peter was saying is, yeah, undoubtedly those teams are pretty happy that they didn't cough up a second-round pick for him because he hadn't really played. And I would say, listen, Peter King talks to, obviously, a lot more NFL people over the course of, what, almost three decades as an NFL journalist. Peter is connected, so I'm sure he's not just putting that out there as his own context or the dots that he's connecting. There's probably is some, you know, not buyer's remorse, I won't say, on behalf of the Titans, but I'm sure right now it doesn't look great because he's not been available to them. But with Julio, I think he's still worth the second round pick if you keep him healthy late into the season. If this is the time early on in September and now into early October that he is more limited in his ability, well, you'd rather have him down the stretch run. Now, this is a particularly important stretch, and it comes in the middle of the season. We've talked about it at length. Hosting the Bills, short week, hosting Kansas City, on the road at Indianapolis on Halloween, and then Sunday Night Football in L.A. against the Rams. You would like Julio to play in the majority of those games, given that the Colts stretch over the course of the next month is much, much easier, and it allows them the ability to climb back into the AFC South race. Not that you can, not that you should have considered them dead at 1-4, given what the parity in this particular division looks like. I'm not saying the Titans aren't better. They are better, but they may not look better if they go 1-3. Nobody's denying that. How can you help from going 1-3? Well, you can have a nearly healthy or nearly fully healthy complement of weapons rather than just giving Derrick Henry the ball a million and one times. He's on pace for a ridiculous amount of carries. No running back has had this kind of a workload through five games since 2004, and that's something we'll get into with Ian Harditz of Pro Football Focus coming up next. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved. Are you optimistic about having Julio Jones, and do you consider it essential for him to play on Monday? I'm not saying I don't. I'm just saying that the presence of Marcus Johnson, who will join the show, by the way, at 11:15, we'll talk to Marcus Johnson, who made his first appearance, his debut appearance for the Titans in Week 5 against the Jags. He was critical for them moving the ball on third downs. He'll join us today as well. It's going to be a fun show. Jonathan Crompton, former Vols quarterback, 12:20. Good stuff to get into, given his connection with Lane Kiffin and the matchup that will take place in Neyland on Saturday. But I'm not saying it's not critical to have Julio Jones out on the field. Of course, you would like him at least as a threat, even if he's in a limited capacity, like A.J. Brown was, for example. A.J. Brown, who did play against the Jags, his first game back after dealing with a hamstring injury, and what he told us on Sunday afternoon was that, yeah, he wasn't able to do as much as he would have liked. They had him on a snap count. He played just north of 65% of the snaps in the Titans' win in Jacksonville. About 40 snaps. Actually, right on the money, 40 snaps. And he was able to help them in spurts, but just to have him as something that attracted the defense's attention, maybe just take one extra guy out of the box to give Derek a little bit of a better chance. Not that he needs it at this point. But even if it's in a limited capacity, there's no question having Julio Jones out on the field against Buffalo in some kind of form or fashion gives you an advantage that you would not otherwise have. It's not like Chester Rogers and Josh Reynolds haven't done as much as they're capable of to keep you afloat, but it's, frankly, it's not enough. They look much better as a 3-4 than they do as a 1-2. Nobody's disputing that. You're obviously not doing all you can or all you're capable of in the running game, even though you've got the third best rushing attack in the sport and you've got the running back with the most rushing yards, the most rushing touchdowns, and the most, of course, attempts. So for the Titans, you can be, it gives you a sense of optimism that Julio is out on the field, but don't read too much into it and let the rest of this work week play out ahead of Monday Night Football. I think it does benefit them to have him out on the field and then to not disclose how much he was able to do. We'll see if Mike Vrabel's willing to do that when he speaks to the media. It's always a toss-up when it comes to that kind of proposition. But in this particular game, because you look at what the AFC South, and rather the AFC, the conference as a whole, what the standings look like right now, where the Chargers sit atop, they're currently the one seed, and we know that the playoffs don't start in Week 6, so it's mostly just projection at this point. But still, given the stretch and given the opponents that you have ahead of you, you can seriously cement yourself in this postseason picture if you find a way even to just split these next four games. 2-2, I think, would be an optimal result. Obviously, you would prefer to sweep all four games or go 3-1, but I don't necessarily think that's realistic unless they start to get healthy. Because right now, you're sitting in the four seeds. You got the Bills directly ahead of you at 4-1, the Ravens at 4-1, and the Chargers, a of course, at 4-1. They are undefeated in the conference, the Chargers, 2-0, and they'll play the Ravens this weekend, which is something we talked to Greg Cosell about yesterday on this week's episode of The Install. Follow, rate, review. Would make us very happy if you did that. So if you can get one over on Buffalo, you can leapfrog them in the AFC playoff picture. Now, you know that the first overall seed in each conference is the only team that gets a bye week right now. But if you can find ways to play for a bye week after the start that they've had, I would say that's a pretty decent carrot for you to go out. Not that they weren't going to compete against the Bills anyway, but it gives this game a little extra juice where otherwise you might have looked overmatched. We'll talk about it with Ian Harditz of Pro Football Focus coming up next, and we'll get into the sustainability of Derrick Henry's workload. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. All right. First timer on the show. Big fan for a long time from afar on social media. He's the president of the Cordell Patterson Fan Club. He is Ian Harditz of Pro Football Focus. He joins us now on 104.5 The Zone. We're going to talk some NFL. Boss man, how we living?
Doing great, guys. Every week's a great week when Cordell Patterson is doing the things he's doing this season. You know, he can't ball out all 18 weeks. We got the bye to rest up. But, yeah, appreciate you guys having me on.
No, happy to do it. At iHarditz is where you follow him on the socials. So, listen, Arthur Smith has left us here in Tennessee. He rode Derrick Henry into the sun, basically, into one of the most effective offenses that we've ever seen the Titans put on a field in 2020. Now he goes to Atlanta, and the best skill position player is not Kyle Pitts, the fire-breathing dragon at tight end. It's not Calvin Ridley, who's had, you know, a different kind of a season without Julio Jones down there. It is Cordell Patterson. Help me understand what the hell it is I'm watching in Atlanta's backfield.
It's been a little bit out of necessity with Mike Davis not exactly finding the sort of running room that I think they were hoping for. But hey, as we kind of see with Najee Harris in Pittsburgh, not exactly, you know, sure we should be pinning all of that on Mike Davis. A little more to do with that offensive line that, man, through those first 2 weeks of the season and really the preseason, like just some of the pressure stats that Matt Ryan was having to deal with was absolutely absurd. So I think what Patterson has provided the Falcons
is where you follow him on the socials. So, listen, Arthur Smith has left us here in Tennessee. He rode Derrick Henry into the sun, basically, into one of the most effective offenses that we've ever seen the Titans put on a field in 2020. Now he goes to Atlanta, and the best skill position player is not Kyle Pitts, the fire-breathing dragon at tight end. It's not Calvin Ridley, who's had, you know, a different kind of a season without Julio Jones down there. It is Cordell Patterson. Help me understand what the hell it is I'm watching in Atlanta's backfield.
It's been a little bit out of necessity with Mike Davis not exactly finding the sort of running room that I think they were hoping for. But hey, as we kind of see with Najee Harris in Pittsburgh, not exactly, you know, sure we should be pinning all of that on Mike Davis. A little more to do with that offensive line that, man, through those first 2 weeks of the season and really the preseason, like just some of the pressure stats that Matt Ryan was having to deal with was absolutely absurd. So I think what Patterson has provided the Falcons more than anything, it's just like this quick avenue to get the ball out in the underneath areas of the field, because Kyle Pitts, as we saw, especially last week against the Jets, he is being used, if you want to call him a tight end, wide receiver, unicorn, whatever you want to call him, he is like their number two pass game option behind Ridley. But when you take out Gage, who's been out with an ankle injury, when you have Davis still into the offense himself, I think Patterson just gave him that versatile flex piece that they can use all over the place. And credit to them for not just accepting this and saying, hey, you know, we got a great player that can do a lot of different things. We'll find a way to get him 3-4 touches per game. They've made that 10-12, and it's been working so far. In fantasy land, yes, he probably is someone we really want to consider selling high on, because it's just so hard to be this efficient with his touches the way Patterson has been so far. But just in terms of the way they've used him, I wish it was happening a decade ago.
So you have one of my favorite tweets so far of the NFL season. A couple of weeks ago, that you tweeted, the government doesn't want you to know that Derrick Henry has more catches than Alvin Kamara, and I fell out of my chair laughing. What's been more surprising to you through this NFL season, the fact that Derrick Henry is an actual fixture in the passing game here in Tennessee, or what Atlanta has been doing with Cordell Patterson?
Yeah, the Derrick Henry pass game stuff truly has been wild to see. I think part of it has been Darrington Evans has been on IR but with a hamstring injury to start the year. So I think he's actually due back here pretty soon. But then again, we saw Jeremy McNichols have like a 10-catch game a couple weeks ago. So
McWeapon.
With Henry, it's just with Henry, it's just been interesting because throughout his career, if you just look at his receiving stats, like he has been towards the top of the position in terms of yards per target. Same thing like with Nick Chubb. Even if these guys aren't, you know, Eckler or McCaffrey light as a receiver, when they get the ball thrown to them, great things happen because who wants to try to take these monsters down in the open field when you're able to get them out there? So it's been great to see them just get Henry again, you know, 3 to 5 targets per game. That's all we've ever been asking. Not the 1 or 2 targets per game he's usually been averaging more years than not. So credit to the Titans. I do wonder if now that A.J. Brown is back and Julio Jones is due to be back, that we kind of see that receiving workload disappear. But, man, it just really doesn't matter at this point. Cool stat from one of my favorite analysts in the industry, Rich Rebar, where he went and looked back through first 5 games of any NFL season, and my goodness, Derrick Henry with 156 touches, most all time in NFL history through the first 5 games.
We haven't seen anything like this with Derrick, with just the way that that's the only source of offense. As you mentioned, without Julio Jones, without A.J. Brown, for the last couple of weeks, he was on a snap count against Jacksonville and was able to do some stuff, but not at full strength, and it's still unclear whether Julio is going to play on Monday night against Buffalo. But, I mean, what... It's almost like I'm more mad at NFL coaching staffs in the last couple of years that it's taken them this long to figure out how to maximize the efficiency of running back rather than having us all denigrate the running back position because of the way that NFL offenses have been constructed. Are you kind of looking at that the same way and saying, why did it take you this long to get people like this involved?
I have seen some actually good stuff from my coworker at PFF, Kevin Cole, showing that Nick Chubb and Henry kind of are starting to be that efficient on the ground where they do quote unquote matter more than the other backs. But I still think the replaceable nature of running back, it's always going to be that way compared to the other positions, because there isn't another position on the field that is more dependent on their teammates than running back. And it's not like that they don't matter. Every single position matters, but when it comes down to the fact that we have an arbitrary salary cap for this league, then you got to pick and choose, you know, what positions you want to pay more. So I think the best running back in the world should make as much money as someone wants to pay them. But again, instead we just have these set numbers where, yeah, teams got to try to finish under the cap. So now when the conversation turns to, oh, should I pay a running back versus should I pay a cornerback or running back versus offensive lineman, I think that's where people correctly, I would say, choose to kind of downgrade the running backs. But it's like the idea that you can just get by with anyone. Like if that was the case, how come Nick Saban and Ohio State are always recruiting the very best running backs each year, every single year, and will continue to do so? There clearly is a tier of the great to good to bad running backs like any other position. Now, I think we can see running backs be made average based on, you know, domination at the line of scrimmage or having a bad quarterback more so than other position groups. But hey, it's been great to see Henry and Chubb really leading the new age revolution of just proving that some of these not early down grinders, but just monsters really running between the tackles still can take over games week in and week out.
What Ian is trying to say is that once you get Marcus Mariota the hell out of here, Derrick Henry started to thrive, which is something that we've all been able to witness. Ian Harditz of Pro Football Focus is our guest here on 104.5 The Zone. We're talking numbers in the NFL right now, Derrick Henry's workload. But let's look at this this particular matchup against the Bills on Monday night. There's two pretty good categories that the Bills are leading the NFL in. One is points scored, and the other is fewest points allowed. It's pretty solid ground that Buffalo is standing on right now. They look to be just overwhelming at this point. They're coming off a win at Kansas City by 18 points, and I know the Chiefs, the offense, frankly, hasn't been terribly efficient, and the defense appears to be wretched. But where do you see the matchups at all favoring the Titans, Ian? Because I can't find a place other than if the wide receivers here are healthy that they may be able to take advantage of what Buffalo has in the secondary right now.
You said it, and it was one of those things where going into last week, every week I do this, I call it my mismatch manifesto article, and I try to look at these matchups, because every time we talk about a matchup, for saying how well Derrick Henry set up. It's, hey, the Titans, you know, number two ranked run offense versus the number 30 ranked run defense. So I just basically combined those numbers to give us one-way metrics, color-coded, really easily shows you the best and worst matchups all over the field. And Buffalo has just been so much better all season long, except for that week one game against the Steelers, that at this point I feel like we need to investigate, because the fact that the Bills dropped that one is makes the least sense of anything they've done all year. But even last week, going in that Chiefs game, everything was popping off the page as advantage Bills, advantage Bills, advantage Bills. The only problem, quote unquote problem, was that until last week, I mean, the first four games of the year, Josh Allen was really mediocre in three of them. So they were still putting up points. He was still doing good things, but I think they were really benefiting from that early season schedule. Now we found out when they did play a real team like the Chiefs, it didn't matter. They kept on, you know, they kept on kepting on. But I just think that going down this Titans game, yeah, they're going to need to hopefully have the best versions of A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, because as we see with Tannehill, he's not someone they necessarily ask to drop back 30-plus times per game if they can help it. Now, I don't think they're going to be able to help it against number one scoring offense, as you mentioned. So for Tannehill, I still think he's been awesome this year, one of PFF's top 10 highest-grade passers. The counting numbers haven't quite been there as much, but it's hard to put up big numbers when you're handing it to Derrick Henry 30 times a game and when your top two receivers are out of commission for most of the season. So I'm just hoping that this passing game can keep the Titans in it, because, yeah, to your point, especially Bills offense versus Titans defense, I have no idea how they slow these guys down.
Well, and we're still trying to figure out if the Titans are a real team, as you mentioned the Chiefs are. It's very unclear at this point, especially perplexing after they lost to the godforsaken New York Jets. Ian Hart is here with us on 104.5 The Zone. So with that being said, Ian, I guess – when I'm looking at this and I see not just their red zone efficiency having gone down here in Tennessee, and listen, it was difficult. It was going to be difficult to maintain that regardless. It's crazy that they've been able to translate it over the past 2 years the way that they have. Of course, Arthur Smith leaves. They're injury riddled at this point. But it's not just the red zone or the decrease in red zone efficiency that stands out to me about this offense. It's the fact that they're just simply lacking these explosive plays. Now, I think Todd Downing's playbook has been super limited as a result of the lack of available weapons that they would ideally have in this scheme. But what are you kind of seeing numerically from what they've been able to produce, or really what they haven't been able to produce outside of Jeremy McNichols in the screen game, as we talked about earlier?
Hey, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So seeing McNichols get that, I kept wondering why they were dialing him up for him, but then he'd be running down the field again. So whatever works. You said it with the explosive plays, right? Just in terms of 20-yard completions per drop back, only the Saints and the Bears have been worse than the Titans this year. But again, I think that all just comes down to the health of these receivers. I mean, in week two, A.J. Brown, unfortunately, unlike him, dropped two of those deep passes downfield against the Seahawks. The next game, he plays a total of, I think it was 8 or 12 snaps, hurt, misses last week, and they just didn't really need to even try to throw the ball in week 5. So we've only got – I don't even know if we've gotten like a full game experience yet of this passing game at its best. That Seattle game was probably the closest, and again, those drops by A.J. Brown didn't really help anyone involved. So in week 1, the big issue that, you know, everyone, you know, every analyst that had access to a PFF sub or whatever was talking about was the lack of play action opportunities for Tannehill. We have seen that number come back to a better spot, though, in recent weeks. So explosive plays, you know, are something that Tannehill and this offense has lived by. I mean, when you look at just the yards to target numbers, A.J. Brown, even Corey Davis were putting up last year, just true anomalies at the position. So I do think we will see those get back to fruition here soon. Now, if it's going to be against Tre'Davious White and company remains the bigger question. I'm really curious to see how they defend these Titans wide receivers, because last year when they faced off in week 5, the Bills actually had Josh Norman, who is now in the 49ers, yes, shadow A.J. Brown. Did not go well. And Tre'Davious White, while he has matched up a little bit one-on-one with the opponent's best receiver, he did so with Terry McLaurin. He doesn't do so every week. He let Deontay Johnson do his thing. Also didn't match Brandon Cooks, didn't match Tyreek Hill, among others. So I would think with AJB and Julio out there healthy, ideally, we don't know with Julio yet, that they're probably going to leave Trey White just on his side of the field. But it'll be a chess match, man. You got Tremaine Edmonds patrolling the middle of the field, too. It's going to be tough for them maybe this week to fully get back to the explosive offense that we're used to seeing. But at least we got that Week 7 spot against the league's single worst defense in Kansas City coming up in Week 7.
Isn't that the truth? At iHarditz is where you can follow our friend Ian Harditz of Pro Football Focus. So, with that being said, and it's funny that you bring up Josh Norman because the people of Nashville were celebrating the one-year anniversary of him getting stiff-armed into the core of the earth by Derrick Henry on a play that didn't even count. But, you know, it counts for the meme purposes, and Josh Norman will live forever as getting just tossed aside by another grown man. With that being said, Ian, it continues to be a fascination to me, the Buffalo Bills, just with how much more efficient Josh Allen has become. I was waiting to kind of see a larger sample size this season of the progression that he's made, the ball location, the accuracy. He's not doing it necessarily conventionally, right? He's got this rocket launcher of an arm, and he physically looks like Justin Herbert, but Justin Herbert is so much more mechanically and technically sound, and still they're doing things at such a high level with the Buffalo offense that it's kind of blown me away how much different he looks as a quarterback. Have you ever seen, and have you guys, I assume you guys have been tracking this at great length, have you ever seen as big a progression in an individual player and performance as Josh Allen over the last two seasons?
Nah, he really does stand out like as the exception to the rule that you can't teach accuracy. I mean, I think this is something that like Troy Aikman talks about all the time on, you know, his broadcast, the idea that with quarterbacks, yeah, you can improve things, you can make it easier, but at the end of the day, you kind of have that skill or you don't. And with Josh Allen, like the hilarious thing that people were sending out there on the old Twitter sphere up until the beginning of last season was the fact that this guy had never averaged even 60% completion rate in high school and college. We had someone digging up his like JV numbers and trying to prove that he still wasn't hitting 60% completion rate in those years. So to see him finish 0.8 percentage points away from 70% in 2020, like it wasn't just this year-to-year progression. We saw some nice progression from 2018 to 2019. They did a good job fixing the offensive line. They got him John Brown. They got him Cole Beasley. So I think adding Diggs to the equation in 2020 should have produced a moderate increase, but to see him go from pretty much anyone's idea of a below average quarterback to a complete world beater. No, yeah, I don't think anyone really could have seen that coming. But I think what Allen and you mentioned Herbert, and just really a lot of these new dual threat guys, I know you can't really compare anyone in the league to the way Josh Allen plays, but quarterbacks that have the arm to, you know, get that ball 60 yards downfield and also have the mobility to take off and scramble when needed, they really force defenses to account for every square inch of the field for better and for worse. So that's why I think even Allen's earlier parts of his career, you know, being 5-6 as a rookie on a pretty terrible team, being 10-6 in 2019, like he was always even a great fantasy quarterback before he was a great real life quarterback because of all these extra things he does that you're just not used to seeing quarterbacks do. Like in 2019, man, like the Josh Allen experience was, in my opinion, almost more fun than just the really good MVP runner-up version of Josh Allen. Like for him to be in a playoff game against the Texans, throwing the ball over his head, trying to lateral with under 2 minutes left, tossing up in double coverage to his fullback. It's certainly better for Bills fans that Josh has reined in that side of him over the years. But yeah, man, it's just, again, having that quarterback with that arm, with that mobility, and now just mastering the mental side of things. You know, we talk about these project quarterbacks, they call them, and the potential upside if they put everything together. We're seeing it. He's put everything together, and the result right now is four straight games with at least 35 points. And I understand Chiefs, Texans, Washington Dolphins. These aren't the toughest defenses in the world. But, man, oh, man, if things are clicking for this Buffalo offense, I don't know if there is a defense out there that can really slow them down.
And it's a good thing that the Titans can continue to give up plays of 30-plus yards throughout the course of the five games this season. I'm sure that Josh Allen is going to have a field day. The mismatch manifesto for Week 6 is up and available at Ian's Twitter account, at iHarditz. As we mentioned, he's looking at combined EPA per play. Ian, for the people who are uninitiated to football analytics, if you could explain EPA per play for people and tell them where you think the biggest mismatches in Week 6 lie. It's a pretty interesting slate of football games, that, given that you'll see the Chargers at Baltimore, you've got the Arizona Cardinals going against the Cleveland Browns this weekend, and honestly a sneaky fun game with the Cowboys traveling to New England, even if New England hasn't been as overwhelming on defense as we're used to seeing. Kind of walk the people through it and where you think that the most advantageous matchups lie this week.
EPA is just at its root estimated points added per play, and it's just a good measure of overall efficiency for your run game or pass game and what you're doing per play. Points win football games. Let's try to see how many were estimated to come from this metric. So again, just the goal with these numbers are to give us one-way metrics to show the matchup advantage without always having to go back and forth between the offense and defense. And, you know, hate to break it to Titans fans here, but yeah, the Bills stand out as one of the teams this week, just absolutely set up to smash in this spot. And again, part of that could be the fairly soft stretch of the schedule to start, but it's Bills over Titans, Cowboys over Patriots, Bengals over Lions, and Rams over Giants really stand out as the top four matchups that, you know, I've deemed blowout alert, because there does seem to be that big of a difference between the two offensive matchups on the field. The, you know, one interesting trend I found, particularly from a gambling perspective, that's been good in the early parts of the year is actually betting on teams that are expected to have the larger offensive advantage, but are still underdogs. So this week, we see the Panthers coming in as plus one against the Vikings, the Chargers as plus three, which actually really surprised me to see them as underdogs this week to begin with. And then also we have the Cardinals plus three as well. And as great as Baker Mayfield has been, stuff, I think Kyler Murray is the best quarterback on the field in that battle. So for me, the Chargers and the Cardinals games are particularly intriguing. Like, hey, as great as the Bills are, that's the game we need to see Herbert and Allen really squaring off. And, you know, between Allen, Herbert, and Mahomes, and you can throw Lamar in there too, I'm not so sure how many we had those crazy AFC championship stats with, oh, it's always been between Brady, Big Ben, you know, or Peyton Manning for like X amount of years. I think we're about to see a similar trend unfold with some of these youngsters in the AFC.
Well, thank God, because I'm tired of seeing Ben Roethlisberger with a body like a trash bag full of broken glass out there winning football games. It's time for some new blood at this point, and they have been just a particular kind of awful, even if they got the win over the course of this weekend. Ian Harditz, Pro Football Focus, is where you can read his work. At iHarditz is where you can follow him on the socials. I don't got to tell you that you killed it, buddy, but now that's unfortunate for you because we're going to harass you to come back very soon.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate you having me on. Have a good week six.
We love to see it. Enjoy the football. Ian Harditz, Pro Football Focus, kind enough to give us his time. I rolled the dice there, Lucas, because I knew as soon as I asked him to explain EPA per play that we were going to lose some people, but he's smart. He knows. He's done this before. He brought it back home to the gambling advice, and we're back in it, baby. You'll love to see it. We'll react to what he had to say about Buffalo and how the Titans are potentially one of the teams this weekend, at least numerically, that are on blowout watch in Ian's own terms. We'll talk about it coming up next. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. So we got to have Ian back, right? Like, that was really fun. I'm trying to, you know, we're trying to create a regular cast of characters around here. I think we've done a pretty good job so far. We'll have Marcus Johnson, Titans wide receiver, join the show a little less than a half hour from now. Jonathan Crompton, former Vols quarterback. Major ties to Lane Kiffin. I was just catching up on some of the work that's been done on Lane Kiffin. We're going to talk about the Titans here in just a second. And really pivot to a lot of Vols conversation, because this is a fantastic game coming up this weekend. Lucas is going. He's going to be in the stands. It's going to be a sold-out crowd. Checker Neyland. I saw a Vols promotion, or rather an Ole Miss promotional item that said chess versus checkers, which made me laugh.
That was well done.
It's not just trolling from the head coach. Now the social media department's in on the action too, and it's going to cause some tension. But I'm catching up on Bruce Feldman and Adam Sparks, who have written, just incredible pieces about the night that Lane Kiffin left the University of Tennessee and held that 59-second press conference in a conference room, because all of the walls of her all of the area around the media, normal media area, was being just blocked off by insane and enraged Tennessee fans. And we'll spend some time talking about that at a little greater length. I want to know if Vols fans have forgiven Lane Kiffin, because that's still a sore spot with a lot of people. And I want to ask, well, Lucas is going to ask Jonathan Crompton how he experienced that particular night, because that was the year after Crompton had graduated. And, of course, the greatest success of Jonathan Crompton at the University of Tennessee was under Lane Kiffin. But I want to touch on something that Ian said last segment about the Titans being on blowout watch, basically, against the Bills. It's just statistically and numerically where the advantages lie and what the teams have done to this point. And that's not indicative of who they'll be in the future, either of them. But when you consider that the last time the Buffalo Bills played a bad Josh Allen game, it was against the Titans a year ago yesterday. And since then, they have just been absolutely swarming people. So when you look at this particular game, Cosell and I talked about this yesterday. The Bills don't necessarily have a clear and obvious weakness to this point that you can take advantage of. I think probably the thing that maybe you can pinpoint the most is their offensive line isn't great. The Titans are 30th in pass blocking efficiency at this point. I just did a hit in Buffalo. I did an interview in Buffalo last night. We were talking about the Bills' offensive line not being all that impressive, but the Titans are giving up 4 sacks per game and many, many more pressures. They have allowed an incredible amount of pressures through 5 games on the season thus far. So if you can take advantage of the Bills' alleged weaknesses, which at this point really only appears to be the offensive line, I think you can find ways to make Josh Allen make bad decisions. But it has to be, I mean, you just don't have a margin for error. It's almost like playing Kyler Murray in week one, right? Where you're getting to the quarterback. You're right in his face the entire time. And if you want to jump in on this, 615-737-1045 is the number. 615-737-1045. You're right in Kyler Murray's face. You're putting him on skates, basically, because he's running right, then he's coming back left, then he's going back to his right again. He rips off a pass on 3rd and 10, goes for 18 yards to Rondale Moore, and you're just sitting there like, what the hell? You had him dead to rights 3 times. Now, Kyler Murray has been doing that to everybody this season, so maybe that makes you feel a little better. Maybe that makes you feel worse about your defense, because it's just not been effective at stopping those kind of guys. And there's a lot more of those kind of guys in the league right now. Josh Allen is one of them, but also he's 6'5" and has an arm unlike anybody in the sport at this point. Josh Allen, Mahomes is great, and Mahomes is fun to watch. I've seen Mahomes play a couple of times live now because the Titans have played him a couple of times. I've seen Josh Allen live twice too. They played at Buffalo. Josh Allen's rookie year was a much different experience. And then last year, it was a really bad performance by him. It's the last bad Josh Allen game that we've seen. But the Titans have the ability to frustrate the quarterback right now. And if you can use this, it's only a little bit longer of a week, but if you can use this opportunity to get your guys healthy up front, to get Jeffrey Simmons playing at a high level, Danico Autry, Harold Landry, those guys have all been hugely effective. But if you can somehow find a way to get Bud Dupree back out on the field, I think it makes a world of difference if he's even 60% of the player that you expect him to be. I don't think we're going to see 100% Bud Dupree in 2021. I think this is a much longer-term play than Titans fans may be willing to accept. And I understand. You paid him a bunch of money. He's supposed to be the savior of the pass rush, but he also tore his ACL in December, and that's going to look a little slower than you expect. But there are ways to fluster Josh Allen. It's just, you know, nobody's been able to do it thus far. 615-737-1045. Let's go to Alex, who's in Dixon and wants to weigh in on a Titans edge versus the Bills. What's up, Alex?
What's up, man? I hope you guys are doing well. You know, I've been listening to you guys here for a little bit, and the past week about, you know, the Titans and the Bills, and I'm kind of getting the same vibes as I got, you know, pretty much throughout, you know, the last few big games we've had. I mean, I think it's fair to say that we consistently beat the best teams in the league. We consistently have beaten the Chiefs. We have consistently beaten the Ravens. And yeah, the past, you know, time, yes, we've lost, but I mean, if you look at the grand scheme of things in the past 4 or 5 years, I mean, we've consistently beat all these teams who are regarded as top teams. I mean, I'm getting the same feeling I got versus the Ravens in the playoffs 2 years ago, or the Patriots, or even when we just play the Chiefs in the regular season and we find a way to win. So I'm thinking that we're going to have a big edge on our defensive line. I think if we can get some pressure up front, that it's really going to turn the tides. And I think.
Uh-oh, what happened? Where'd it go? All right, we can cut him. I think he got – sounded like somebody like came up. Was he at work?
I don't know. Yeah, he might have gotten in trouble.
That's hilarious. I wish that happened more often. This is like kids sneaking out of class to call us in the middle of their school day. Why don't we talk about that coming up next? Because I think that's an interesting dynamic that Alex has just laid out. Don't forget, Titans wide receiver Marcus Johnson going to join us at 11:15 before the team hits the practice field today. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone.